British Public Radio. Travel.
Travel Bites, in association with discovernorthernireland.com. Enjoy giant breaks at mini prices.
Hello there, my name's David Gordon, and you're very welcome to Travel Bites. On this episode, our trip to the Fon Valley investigates Base One Europe at the Beech Hill Country House Hotel. Arthur von Biesenberger also takes us to Koh Samui in the south of Thailand. But first, we're going up in the air with Francis Beasley in Devon.
Greetings, it's Francis here from the heart of Europe. Well, hot air balloons are without doubt considered to be one of the most majestic things to adorn the skies. And when this takes place en masse, the sight is certainly spectacular. Each year, the Tiverton Hot Air Balloon Festival takes place in mid-Devon. Held in the grounds around the local college, participants come from far and wide, and a weekend festival which incorporates mass ascents, night glow demonstrations, and the opportunity for the individual to experience a ride for £99 all contribute to a successful event, provided, of course, the weather plays ball. In England, this can certainly be a question mark, as it was in 2012, when the entire event was rained off. However, 2013 brought long dry spells with high temperatures, ensuring a record turnout of balloons and also visitors. For those familiar with balloons, the sounds of a burner is as distinctive as the cry of a child. Its short, sharp burst alerts one to the proximity of a balloon, often long before you actually see it. The massive wind fans that inflate the envelope, as the balloon is called, during the initial stages, can run for long periods, depending on the size of the envelope. Larger balloons, which carry baskets that can accommodate up to 16 people hanging below them, take a considerable time to set up, whilst the more enterprising balloonists may just have a small envelope, a small cylinder, and a strap-like chair hanging below. The latter certainly caused more than a few gasps from the spectators, myself included, as it looked precarious at best. However, the pilot was experienced and seemed totally unperturbed at the flimsiness of his seat. Around 30 hot air balloons participated in the festival in 2013, and to watch a mass ascent, which is when groups of around 5 balloons aim to take off at about the same time, provides a great chance to appreciate the magic of flight. Nobody can deny that the peace and quiet as one sails over the land, looking at what seem like miniature houses and people below, is an awe-inspiring experience. Perhaps the most novel today is the shape and size in which balloons come. The standard shape is still the most popular, as it's easier to inflate and also to control. However, the creative have designed and flown balloons in shapes like beer bottles, castles, and even animals. A healthy respect is required to fly a balloon, acknowledging that weather conditions are paramount, and despite fare-paying passengers believing a balloon can be landed when and where they want. But this is not so. The pilot is at the mercy of the wind, or the lack of it. The three-day event takes place predominantly in the early morning from 5:30 a.m. when the weather is at its coolest, and again in the evening after 8 p.m. when once again the weather has cooled down. These provide the optimum times for flying. As with most festivals, few people bother to go as a spectator to watch the balloons take off in the early morning. However, evening provides a host of other opportunities, when after the flights have finished and the balloons return to the field, some are reinflated, and by the light of the burners in the dark of the night, a musical event takes place when the pilots ignite the burners in time to music. The balloons are inflated but tethered, and the sight is definitely different, and one to appreciate, albeit with the long light evenings, that it usually only takes place well after 10 p.m. At the Tiverton Festival, there are bands providing live music on specially constructed stages, while stalls boasting West Country food
ranging from pies to sausages, provides more than enough for the hungry. Naturally, no West Country event would be complete without a cider stall, and for those who get seriously hot under the collar, there are even spa displays, though sadly, this year, someone managed to steal one, though quite how you sneak off with a spa tucked under your arm has yet to be ascertained by the police. Regardless, the Tiverton Hot Air Balloon Festival, that takes place in mid-July each year in Devon, is definitely a winner.
You're listening to Travel Bites. You can find us online at travelbitesradio.podbean.com and also on iTunes. As you know, we're connected with radio travel shows around the world, including ATW.TV in California. And here, Arthur von Wiesenberger takes us to the south of Thailand and the resorts of Koh Samui.
Koh Samui is an island off the east coast of Thailand, about an hour flight from Bangkok. It's the third largest island in Thailand, although roads were only introduced in the 1970s. With a dense jungle in the center of the island, the coast is filled with white sandy beaches, coral reefs, coconuts, and over 1.5 million tourists a year. The Four Seasons Resort is located about 40 minutes drive from the airport on a private beach. There are one-bedroom villas scattered throughout the hillside overlooking the Gulf of Siam. They're surrounded by dense foliage, giving one the sense of a private remote residence, although most are connected to a mirror villa next door. This works out fine unless children are playing Marco Polo in the pool next door, which is the game of choice for our next-door neighbors. The air-conditioned villas and luxurious beds are wonderful and include a garden shower, large bathroom with tub, and views of the pool and beyond. The outdoor deck focuses around the 15-square-meter infinity pool, outdoor lounges, day bed, and dining table.
I took a walk out on the streets in the night, with her in mind, it's the finest of times.
Most of the villas require a golf cart or buggy service to get one to the various parts of the property, including the beach. It's a fine, white, sandy beach surrounded by coconut trees with beach lounges and a large infinity pool, restaurant, and bar. One of the most refreshing drinks are the fresh, chilled coconut water served straight from the coconut. The charming service staff makes regular rounds with complimentary snacks, and the food service at the beach is very good, such as a beautiful bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich, beautifully presented, and as tasty as it looked.
Thank God I got you by my side. I woke up empty, now a new feeling resides. Oh, I. Oh, I.
During certain times of the year, the hotel's beach has very low tides, making swimming a real challenge. In fact, the time I swam out, I scraped myself raw on coral, which was just under the surface of the water. I learned after my return to the U.S. that the hotel would have made arrangements to take swimmers to a better beach during the low tide season. Oh well. The infinity pool at the villa was truly one of the best features of the hotel and gave one hours of recreation and relaxation. The spa is also a destination for relaxation, although the seemingly endless stairs to the various treatment rooms on the mountainside was contrary to relaxing.
So after quite a hike through the jungle, I'm now in my little bungalow here in the Four Seasons Koh Samui Resort, about to have my Thai massage in my Thai PJs. First stop, a foot wash.
What's that?
It's a kampolang. You put in the soup.
Oh, yeah, it's like tom kha kai. Tom kha kai.
Yeah,
soup.
Tom yam kung.
So awesome.
With prawn.
Yeah.
Ah. Rice powder, coconut oil, honey, and milk powder. Oh. Yes. So the smell looks like a dessert.
Mmm, smells delicious.
Yeah.
I'd like to eat my foot.
Cooking.
Yeah, for cooking.
Yeah.
On this particular Sunday at 3 p.m., the hotel began setting up for a private wedding on the beach, ending any chance of a peaceful afternoon on the shore. Worse was, the wedding caused the cancellation of the planned beach barbecue, so the guests had to find alternative dining options. Seasons is a 25-minute taxi ride to the nearest village, Bohut Fisherman's Village. The funky but charming town is filled with t-shirt shops, restaurants, and bars. Street food such as Thai spring rolls, coconut ice cream, and crepes made with Nutella and banana are especially alluring. And negotiating for that next t-shirt or souvenir is a fun exercise.
Somebody told me everything's alright. The life's too short to be afraid. It's leading up to what I want to say. Living should be giving it away. Contemplating every single day. And learning so we educate and be positive. It is what it is. Come on, set examples for the kids. No, I don't want to scare you, no I don't.
The full moon party on the neighboring island of Koh Phangan is a 30,000-plus beach party with fire dancing, limbo, body painting, lots of inebriates, and pulsating dance music. Every full moon, boats filled with partygoers make the 20-minute crossing, and the night goes on even as the moon gives way to the morning sun and modern-day Gomorrah wakes up to Hangover 2. Koh Samui, it seems, has something for every taste and for every budget.
Living should be given in a way. Contemplating every single day. And learning so we educate and be positive. It's what it is. Come on, set the tables for the kids.
From stunning scenery to ancient treasures.
Welcoming country hospitality.
Family fun.
Why not discover the Fawn Valley for yourself?
Start your journey
at discoverfawnvalley.com.
The Beech Hill Country House Hotel, as well as being a fantastic place to stay, is also quite historic. It was a base for the US Marines in World War II. A memorial to the Marine Corps stands in the garden, and a new World War II museum, archive and woodland trail have recently opened at the estate. I spoke to a number of people while I was there recently just to investigate this a little bit further. The first was American author and filmmaker Mary Pat Kelly, who really is the instigator of the entire project.
It was the fact that I was looking to restore links that I discovered between particularly the U.S. Marine Corps, who I have some very close friends in, and Derry. Because, for one thing, 25% of the Marines married Derry girls, so the connection was very close. And there was a great sense that this was kind of a home away from home for them. It was a place where they could train, but also have a wonderful experience that they took with them, because when they left here, they went to the Pacific, and they were in the terrible battles, Iwo Jima, Guam. And I always think of them carrying the memory of this place. In fact, Phil Coulter wrote a song for my documentary, which was called Home Away from Home. And it was about sailing into hell with the memory of Derry and the music and the laughter. And that had always been my experience of Derry, that even in the most difficult times, there was such a great spirit here, and I could really imagine how they connected to that spirit. And all of it is so that lots and lots of people come to Derry. Mm-hmm.
What does something, as we now have as Base One Europe, as way this is being marketed, I suppose, but what does the history of this place mean to Americans with a Marine history?
Well, of all the services, the Marine Corps is the one that's the proudest of his heritage. And interestingly enough, it has a large percentage of Irish Americans over the time. The first winner of the Medal of Honor was an Irish American Marine. So there's that whole heritage, a real connection to Ireland. There's even T-shirts that are called Irish Marine. And so there's kind of a longing and a hunger to connect. And then to find out that during World War II, they were actually here in large numbers. And they were involved in very important things like the invasion of North Africa and training for D-Day and intelligence in D-Day. And also they had this kind of magical time of hospitality and connection, and then went into horrific battles. So I think that sense that Irish people then, as now, offered hospitality. And the head of the Marines here was a real wonderful character called Colonel James Red Dugan, who was 6 feet five from Boston, and really embraced his role as the connector between the Marines and the community. And I think that sense that we feel in the United States of a connection and the admiration for Derry, how it's brought itself back. When I first came here, there were no restaurants. There were no movie theaters. There was not any real shopping. And to see how this city has transformed itself without losing its essential identity. And it means a lot not only to the families. We've had many of the families of men who were stationed here. In the beginning, we had the actual veterans come back, and it was very emotional to see them connect. But now I think it's not only those families. Last year, we had a young Marine officer come to visit who also happened to be President Obama's helicopter pilot. So it just casts a wide net, and there's always been a certain sense of serendipity about it.
One of the other people involved in the project is Mark Lusby. He explained to me more about why Beech Hill was used as Base One Europe.
Well, it connects with one of those times when this city played a key part in the world stage. Obviously, during the War of the Three Kings, during the Great Siege of Derry, Ashbrook and Beech Hill were part of that story as well. The Beech Hill was actually burnt during the Siege of Derry, and the arch that we've just passed as well is the last remains of the house that was burnt at the time of the Siege of Derry. So that's when these houses played a key part in that world history. The second key event was the Battle of the Atlantic during the Second World War, and the Americans came to Northern Ireland in June 1941, exactly 5 or 6 months before Pearl Harbor, and in secret they established the largest American naval base in Europe, and it was codenamed Base One Europe. And Beech Hill Camp, which encompassed the woodlands around here at the Beech Hill Country House Hotel, and also Ashbrook, was the main accommodation camp for that secret U.S. naval base.
And when you go into the hotel, I mean, what they've now created is this spectacular photographic exhibition and video exhibition inside the hotel. But also now, they've now got walkways all around the area where you can go and see different pinpoints of interest from the camp. Can you just describe some of those for us?
Well, in the woodlands, there were 490 Quonset huts providing accommodation for up to 2,000 American personnel, and what you can see in the woodlands now is the remains, the footprint of all those huts, and within the museum we've managed to get the archives back from the United States, so we've actually got the construction plans and the photographic evidence for how those huts were used, so people can actually go through the woodlands, take the map and work out what the different functions of each of the remains of those huts were, and get an impression, connect them with the photographs and the people and the stories, and get an impression of what it was like here during World War II.
How important was this particular location as in the American war effort, do you think?
The U.S. Naval Base played a key part in helping to change the fortunes of the war. The battle, you know, Britain was being starved from in food and from goods for war. The German U-boats were being very successful. So 70 years ago, 1943, when the base was fully established, when there was when the River Foyle was full of American destroyers, British destroyers, and Canadian destroyers, this was the turning point of the Second World War, because supplies, the destroyers started to win, supplies started to come in to Britain again, and in order to protect the base, they couldn't have all the facilities in one place, so the countryside was used extensively as part of that base. And here in the Fawn Valley, we not only had accommodation bases for the Americans, we also had the munitions, and just across the way in Fincarn Glen is the remains of the big ammunition dump that supplied those destroyers during the Second World War.
From stunning scenery to ancient treasures.
Welcoming country hospitality.
Family fun.
Why not discover the Fawn Valley for yourself?
Start your journey
at discoverfawnvalley.com.
So we're sitting here in the Skipton Hall at the Beech Hill Country House, and I have the great pleasure, I have to say, of not only sitting in one of the top 100 hotels in Ireland, but I'm also in the company of one of the top 10 great hotel managers, Patsy. Thank you for welcoming us back to the Beech Hill again.
David, I'm delighted. It's a great pleasure to have you back. And I want to thank John and Sally McKenna for recognising the fact that I do try to do a good job. And it's just, I have a passion for this industry. And I just think, you know, there's no point in doing a job unless you do it 110%.
That's very true. And I think most people who know the Beech Hill know you're the sort of the linchpin of the whole place and keep it all going. Tell me about the hotel itself. What sort of facilities can people expect?
Well, I mean, it's a manor house. It's a Georgian manor. It's got all the history. It's got the World War II history with the US Marine, little exhibition room. It's got very comfortable accommodation. I mean, we have superior rooms and standard rooms and suites. So we have a variety of accommodation. I think we have absolutely superfood. We believe in using only regional produce. We have three super chefs who understand and share my vision about serving local and serving it really prepared properly so that we give people an experience when they have had dinner.
It's not just ordinary members of the public you've entertained here. You've had presidents and all sorts of folk coming to the Beech Hill.
Yes, we've been very lucky with the calibre of visitors we've had over the years. I mean, former President Clinton, John Kerry, Chelsea, Hillary Clinton, Will Ferrell. The list is endless. But they really appreciate the Irish hospitality and the Irish welcome, and they also love to be staying in a Georgian manor and just living life as it was 300 years ago.
Of course, I mean, there is a big pull for the American market here because of this was BS1 Europe.
Yes, I mean, the revival in World War II history is huge at the moment, and we have tried to tell the story as it was, and it's a great experience for people to come. So, I mean, I couldn't begin to tell you it would take me forever. I think, you know, just come, see for yourself.
And of course you'll enjoy the lovely waterfalls and the walks as I did this morning of this beautiful sunny morning here, and there's fantastic walks around the area too.
Yeah, I mean, the whole surroundings are just fantastic. It brings you right back to nature. It brings you right back to, you know, I think enjoying all the things that don't cost a lot of money to put there, and they make you relax, make you feel good, enjoy the fresh air, enjoy just everything there. Everything about Beech Hill is to be enjoyed.
Those involved in the development of BS1 Europe at the Beech Hill have realised the importance of the site to Americans, especially to those with a marine history, as Mark Lusby explains.
We actually have a place which contains and celebrates a little bit of their history. It's something they value. So not only do we get former US presidents, Speaker of the Congress, ordinary Americans who are connected with the US Navy, the US Construction Battalion, and particularly the US Marines would come here to almost as a form of pilgrimage, because it's part of where they can connect with their history.
And that's very important for many people, is to be able to do that. And this is somewhere people actually come and tangibly touch places that their ancestors, indeed, as you say, their fathers and forefathers were actually based at.
Yeah, in the woodlands, there's some of the fence posts, the perimeter fencing that was erected 72 years ago in 1940-41. And on that, you can still make out the stenciling on that. And it says, you know, fencing for Base 1, the secret camp in Europe. And you can imagine some naval guy in Rhode Island stenciling that on, and it'd been shipped all the way over here and staying here 70 years on in the grounds of the Beech Hill.
There's an association associated with the Beech Hill for the American servicemen, isn't there?
Yeah, well, we have a Beech Hill US Navy and US Marines Friendship Association, which I'm a volunteer, and what we're trying to do is collect all the American stories, but also the stories and memories of local people of the time that the Americans were here. And we have an extensive network of contacts, both locally and in the US, and people are donating all sorts of memorabilia all the time, and we're housing them inside the museum.
I left the Beech Hill with a much greater understanding of the importance of the building and indeed the surrounding area in history.
dating back to the 15, 1600s up to the present day. Base One Europe's a fantastic project and one that I'm going to keep a close eye on. However, I'm going to leave the last word to the American author, Mary Pat Kelly.
I met a man whose father was the aide to Colonel Dugan when he was here. So I could introduce this man to Colonel Dugan's daughter. So, I mean, it's what you said before, to be able to touch the initials of your ancestor, to be able to make that connection is what it's really about.
Travel Bites, in association with DiscoverNorthernIreland.com. Find a big experience with a mini price in Northern Ireland.
That brings us to the end of another edition of Travel Bites. Thank you to all our contributors on today's show. You can find us online at travelbitesradio.podbean.com. You can download all the episodes from iTunes, and now we're also on Spreaker. Thanks for listening, and tune in next time.